This Rock Talk podcast recording is an interview and opinion product that is the property of rocksubculture.com, all rights reserved. Rocksubculture.com is not responsible for any statements or opinions expressed by the guests of this program. Welcome to Rock Talk, the official podcast for rocksubculture.com. Each podcast features interviews with special guests to discuss all aspects of popular music. Rocksubculture.com travels the globe to experience, review, and archive live concert events. Interview those involved in producing and performing a variety of genres of popular rock music, as well as find and learn about related studio and stage use artifacts and memorabilia. Now, let's join our host, Jason DeBoard.
So anyway, welcome to Rock Talk. And today my guest is Robbie Gray from Modern English. So welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for talking to me today. And I know you're just wrapping up your West Coast tour of the U.S., you know, here in July. And then you're going to be touring the U.K. in September, correct?
Yeah, I'll be touring the U.K. for the first time with all the original members for 30 years. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So this is the lineup that you guys, you know, I think you broke up in 84, right? The original lineup?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, and what brought you guys back together?
Well, it was actually Mick Conroy, the bass player. He moved close to where I live in England, and we got back in contact. And it was his idea to, try to put the band back together. So we did. It was as simple as that, really.
Okay, and were you guys all living in England at the time, or were you kind of spread it beyond England?
Yeah, well, Gary McDowell, the guitarist, lives in Thailand. So he was sort of, you know, hard to get hold of.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've got a house in Thailand as well. So we managed to touch base a bit while I was over there when we found out we were going to put the band back together. Everybody else lives in England, yes.
Okay. And you guys are currently working on a new album?
Yeah, we're writing new stuff. I mean, we've been quite busy recently with gigs and, you know, rehearsals, so we haven't had much time, but we've got half a dozen things that we're working on that hopefully will turn into a full album at some point, probably next year.
Okay. And did I read it's one of your original producers? Is it Hugh Jones?
Yeah, Hugh Jones. We're sending stuff to him. We haven't actually spoken to him about doing it yet, but it's definitely something we'd be interested in doing. We sent him a couple of tracks, but that's as far as it's got so far.
Okay. Now, you guys originally formed as a band called The Lepers, and it was a punk band. And it was it three of you originally from Modern English that formed as that band earlier?
Yeah. There's me, Mick, and Gary were in The Lepers, and then when we changed from The Lepers to Modern English and started experimenting a bit more, Steve Walker, the keyboard player, came in then.
Okay.
And Dick Brown, the drummer, was actually part of it from the beginning as well, really, to be honest.
Okay. And what kind of inspired you to go in a new musical direction?
Well, punk would have been amazing. You know, it was the reason we started to make music. We would never have done that before punk. But after a few years, it just became commercialized and, you know, it wasn't going anywhere. I mean, the attitude of punk had kind of died, really, mm-hmm. as bands signed to major labels, and it just got watered down. So most of the bands around that time that had been influenced by punk that we liked started, you know, moving in different directions, like Wire and Joy Division and, you know, the Bunnymen and Magazine. That was the sort of stuff that was around that we kind of liked, and we were in that sort of area as well, where, you know, we started to use textures and sounds on keyboards and guitars more than, you know, just thrashing along. Things became slower and more interesting. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the idea of learning how to play properly started to raise his head as well. So we were just finding out how to use our instruments, really.
Yeah. So, like, Joy Division, was an influence for you at the time? Like, what other kinds of music were you listening to before you formed Modern English?
Before, you know, in the early 70s, it would have been, you know, David Bowie, Roxy Music, you know, Iggy, you know, stuff that was good. But we'd never have thought of playing at that point. I mean, the Pistols, the Clash were big influences from punk. You know, the Low album by Bowie was a big influence. I mean, you know, the bands that I've mentioned really are the bands that we liked.
Right. Was it mostly British bands that you were listening to? Like, where did you listen to any American music at all?
Not really. I mean, I suppose the Ramones were around, but you know, but they were quite easy to listen to, weren't they? The Ramones. Mm-hmm. You knew what you were going to get when you put a Ramones record on.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling to think of American acts back then. The Talking Heads, maybe. Yeah, they'd have been a band we'd have listened to. The Talking Heads.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think. The Swans around that time, the New York Swans would be something that, you know, we'd listen to. But it was generally English music because that's where we were and that's where the excitement was for us.
Mm-hmm. So you formed Modern English. What was it like kind of being part of that new movement of music that was really kind of exploding like in the early 80s?
That was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, England was great. I mean, England was just sort of full of creativity and, you know, to sort of suddenly find ourselves, you know, on a plane to America. I remember we were walking down off the plane in Daytona Beach, you know, in our overcoats. That's how little we knew about America. It was only 90 degrees outside and we're wearing coats. And that night we played to 5,000 people.
Wow.
You know, and everybody in the audience saying, "I melt with you." And we'd never come across anything like that in a concert before that we played. So that was the start of the journey.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're really well known by, you know, pretty much everybody for the song "I Melt With You." Didn't that originally get to the States kind of on import and it was played like on college radio and stuff before it was actually officially released?
That's absolutely what happened. I mean, people talk about "I Melt With You," but they don't realize that I think it was one big radio station, you know, a commercial one picked it up, and then another guy picked it up, and then, you know, it just spread like wildfire. It was on import. It wasn't even released. It was after all the radio stations picked it up that we signed to Sire Records as a, you know, to put "I Melt With You" out in America.
Mm-hmm.
Or the After the Snow album, anyway.
Yeah, now, you know, at that time, it seems like there was a lot of awesome music coming out of England, but a lot of it was sort of transitioning from sort of the traditional rock band, you know, bass guitar, keyboard, drums, to more of the synthesizer sound. But "I Melt With You" is really more, you know, the traditional setup. So how do you find that you really kind of created this real, I mean, it's really a really good pop song. I mean, it's just so catchy and there's so many elements in it that kind of hook you in. Do you think it's kind of interesting that really broke out even amidst kind of this newer wave of more synthesizer based music and it still kind of captured people's imagination in that way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we've never really been a synth based band. We just use keyboards as well, you know.
Right.
I mean, it is really a guitar-led band. There's no doubt about that. So in that way, it is more traditional in that sense. And I think with the song "I Melt With You," you've got the melody on the choruses from the keyboard, which is one of the hooks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're right. It's got a lot of hooks on it. And I just think it sort of glides, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, like the 1990 version, especially for me, that Tokes version, it seems like each musical element kind of has its own sort of showcase moment where it really stands out. And I think when you hear it once and then you hear it again, you can kind of in your mind kind of pick and choose, you know, all those different hooky parts of it, you know.
Yeah, I think that was the era of remixes, wasn't it? Where when that came out, I mean that was from the Pillow Lips album when we re-recorded
it.
But we've done another version since, which is for the I Melt With You movie.
Yeah, and that one's totally different.
Yeah, which is more, because the movie's so dark, we did a sort of slowed down, more dark, you know, version of it, which I really like, you know.
Yeah.
Really like that.
Yeah, well, it kind of gives a totally different take on the lyrics and everything, because it's just so much slower and just kind of somber, whereas my, you know, association with the song is it's just so kind of poppy and happy and uplifting, you know, so it kind of takes it in the totally opposite direction.
But I mean, that's not, you know, when I wrote the words, that they weren't, then if you really look at them, they're not that happy.
Yeah, I know. And that's one of my questions, actually, is what it, for you, what is the meaning of the song?
I mean, it's a love song, there's no doubt about that. But originally, you know, you're talking, you know, 1979, 1980, 1981, around that time when that got written. I mean, there was still a Cold War going on, you know,
right,
on the planet. And that it's actually written as a sort of idea of a couple making love. And as they do make love, you know, the bomb drops kind of thing. That was the idea of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. Because it's, I guess it's sort of a contrast of the state of the world versus, like, the basest human instinct of, you know, love and romance and all that.
Yeah, I think you got it right on the head there. I think that's why it works. I really do. And the fact that the music just, you know, glides along, and I think you're right, it is a kind of traditional sort of format song with guitars leading it rather than keyboard, say, like the Flock of Seagulls would have had a lot of keyboard melody flying around and hardly any guitar.
Right.
We're the other way around. It's always been, you know, I've always been confused by this idea of us being a keyboard band, because we were always guitar led.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more like you're kind of in the same subgenre of maybe Echo and the Bunnymen and,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
Psychedelic Furs and, you know, more.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, just like guitar, electric, acoustic, and kind of that's what's driving the music.
And also, you know, with the Mesh and Lace album, you know, before After the Snow, I mean, there's stuff on there that is more textures from both guitars and keyboards. Mm-hmm. You know, we've never written, even though we've got a traditional format on stage, the music, you know, quite a lot of it isn't written traditionally, not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that actually had another question of, you know, your first album was called Mesh and Lace, and then that appears in the lyrics of I Melt With You, and I was just wondering kind of what your association is with those words, where it's kind of prompt, you know, it's in your most known song, and then it's also the title of your first album.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to relate things, you know, and we actually recorded a track called Mesh and Lace, which didn't go on the kind of first album.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of relationships going on. The Mesh and Lace, the track, was recorded on the Mesh and Lace sessions, never got put on the Mesh and Lace album, but came out on a single as well. And then I related that, because Mesh and Lace basically means good and bad, you know, hard and light, you know, just opposites, really.
Right. So during that time, the first few albums, you guys... What are your thoughts on kind of style and fashion and the clothes you wore and, you know, just that element of, you know, the rock band kind of world?
Well, that's really been important, especially to be like Gary, the guitarist. He's really into his clothes.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose everyone is when you look at them individually. Not so much the same styles these days. They're all sort of different. But back in the day, it was quite easy, really. We didn't have any money, so we used to shop in thrift stores. And you know, the look of the black and white look came out of, you know, what we could afford, really.
Right.
But there was, I mean, most bands in England at that time, none of the bands had any money that were making music, so everybody was just wearing basic clothing. That's why you got that kind of gloomy look from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's because nobody could afford to go and spend any money on anything else.
Interesting. So did that change as bands started breaking out? I mean, do you feel like...
I definitely think that when we got to America, we started wearing more colorful clothes, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in England, we would never have worn, I would never have worn a light blue suit in England in those days. No, never.
Yeah. Now, for a time, you guys lived in New York City, is that right?
Mick did, the bass player. He lived in Brooklyn.
Okay. And was that like a pretty interesting experience for him? Because at the time, I mean, people didn't really travel that much for, you know, to and from different countries. I mean, now it's kind of, it's people don't realize, like kids today, that it's no big deal to travel around. But back in the day, it was like huge to go to another country.
Yeah, I mean, Mick really liked New York, you know, from the minute he saw it. And he lived in St. Mark's as well, which is right in the village. I mean, you know, it was an interesting experience for him. I think one time he looked out of his bedroom window and there's a dead body in the bin across the road. So, you know.
Yeah.
But New York back then was really vibrant, though, before, you know, long, long before 9/11 and all the bad stuff. I mean, it was a very exciting city and reminded us a lot of London, actually, as well.
Yeah. Now, you guys did the video for I'm Out With You. What was it like to be on MTV so much? I mean, when it first started, there was only, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 videos. It seems like they played over and over again. Was that kind of surreal for you to have that sort of international exposure?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, the video cost £1,000 to make, which is about $1,500. So we weren't looking for any commercial stardom from it. You know, we just wanted to make a video. And to have it played on heavy rotation on MTV, which is like once an hour, basically, was pretty wild. And when we first came to the East Coast, people would stop us in the street and talk to us because they'd send us, "You're the guys from MTV," kind of thing. You know, they'd be like, "Oh, my God."
Yeah.
It was definitely an experience, and the exposure was amazing.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on kind of the evolution of the music industry and the medium? Like, I mean, you've seen it all, you know, from vinyl to tape to CD to MP3s, and everything's online now. And it's like the kind of the notion of the album sort of been dismantled. And, you know, what is it like to have seen that and experienced all that firsthand?
Well, I think it's really good that you can buy a computer, you can buy a music program and a few mics, and anyone can make a record. It's a bit like the early indie scene in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can get things out there, and because everyone's just tuned into the computer these days, they can hear it or they can find it. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think we just went in the studio in San Francisco, and it was a bit enlightening for us and much more enjoyable than doing it all through computers and through music programs. It's kind of more enjoyable. Even though it might be a bit old school, we enjoyed it. I don't know. I think. I mean, I've got a gold album at home, and it's got a cassette with it. You know, that's how old-fashioned we are. but we are using Logic at the moment to write with. But we kind of use it almost like a tape recorder. We don't use it as a finished product thing.
Right.
So for us, it's a tool really, rather than a finished item that we use modern technology with.
Right. Now, what about the idea of the album? Because I know, you know, back in the 80s, you guys were really involved in, you know, the album artwork. And I know Von Oliver did that. And, you know, there's this awesome book out, which I'm sure you're aware of because you're quoted in it, the Put the Needle on the Record, with all the album artwork and, you know, information about it. I mean, do you think that's kind of completely gone away? Because it seems like in the 80s, there's the artists were just so involved in the look of everything to do with their music, and especially, you know, the album artwork seemed to be a really important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real loss. I mean, you know, when I used to go shopping for records, I'd look for the artwork first, you know, to just kind of get a feel for what the band were doing. And the fact that there's no, you know, when you go online, you download a record, you don't have any semblance of what the band might be interested in art-wise.
Right.
Is a real loss, I think. I mean, working with Vaughan Oliver was really good for the band, it, as well as the music. The sleeves and the artwork were just as important to us.
Right. So, do you listen to a lot of new music now? Or like, is there any particular band that you're a fan of that's a newer band or a newer artist?
Yeah, we do listen to music, but not religiously. I'm not the sort of person who goes home and puts music on.
Mm-hmm.
Other members of the band do that, but I do listen to a lot of music, and Sigur Rós, the Icelandic band, are really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fleet Foxes, American band we listen to a mm-hmm. bit. But there's not, I wouldn't say I go out of my way to sort of listen to too much modern music, really. But although I know there's a lot of good stuff out there because I do hear it.
Right. Now, would you guys ever get involved in some kind of like a broader 80s band tour or a festival or something? Or even like, I think yesterday Coachella announced they're doing like a cruise, like a festival on a boat, basically. Would you guys ever consider doing anything like that?
Yeah, we're open to anything, really. We're not snobs in any way, you know what I mean? I think if somebody said to us, right, here's a package with the Psychedelic Furs and the Bunnymen and Modern English, we jump at it, you know, because I'd rather do that than work, say, with some of the other keyboard bands.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends. It depends what it was, but we're open to anything, really. We're not snobs.
Yeah. So, what is it like for you now playing with all the original members live on stage? Is that pretty exciting for you?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I've known, you know, everybody since they were 16, 17 years old, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And now we're in our 40s and 50s, so it's pretty wacky.
Yeah.
I mean, to turn around on stage and see people, you know, that you've known most of your life is pretty amazing and pretty intense as well.
Yeah. Have you had any, like, really special or surreal moments with your current tour or any surprises or anything?
Well, with Gary McDowell in the band, every day's surreal, you know. I mean, we've had loads of them. I wouldn't know where to start. There's just the moments that happen on stage that just make your toes curl. I think they're probably, but afterwards we've had some fun as well, drinking and carousing.
Yeah. Is there any particular places that are favorites of yours to tour, or any particular venues you really like playing anywhere, like in the world?
Well, we're going to Germany hopefully next year. I'm looking forward to going back to Berlin. I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah.
Venues? Not really. I mean, we're playing some good venues in England. We're playing Dingwalls in London on our little UK tour. Oh, cool. In America, we played the Greek Theatre. That was really nice in LA.
Yeah.
And I can't really think, to be honest with you. We've played so many concerts here.
Yeah.
In so many different size venues.
Yeah. So do you anticipate your new album coming out this year or next year?
It'll be next year now.
Next year.
You know, we've got too much on our plates, really, to finish anything this year. It'll probably be, if we can get four things done for next year, four or five or six, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at Harlow's in Sacramento tomorrow night, and hopefully I'll get a chance to see you again somewhere along the line in the next year or two. So,
all right, man.
All right. Well, thanks so much. All right.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to our program, Rock Talk. For the latest gig archives, articles, and features about popular music and concert events around the world, please visit us online at www.rocksubculture.com.
Even say Moose Busters.